Have you ever had those moments where so much of what you've been working on just comes rushing together and kind of all ties up, and you see what God's been kind of up to and doing? It's kind of like one of those aha moments. Have you ever had one of those?
I have. Yes.
That's exactly how I felt in the conversation that we had today.
It's funny because behind the scenes, I've smiled a couple times because I'm obviously listening to all of these as they're live. And I'm realizing that our guest is saying terms or bringing up stories that are so similar, or they're bringing up a concept. And it's like, well, we know somebody that could help you with that. So I was feeling that for you as well.
But it was just so powerful and so clearly a what we call a God thing, because from this idea, you know how important that word hope is to me and to us and even to our church and I think our world. And so this idea of hope is already a thread. And then there's the idea of creativity and collaboration. What is that like? And all of a sudden, she starts to remind me of my friend Dan Allender and something that he has taught me about the Hebrew name for God, El Roi, and the God who sees you. So this all starts wrapping together. Then this amazing story begins to wrap up into the topic of suicide comes up and hope that comes out of that and healing that comes out of that. And I was trying to keep up with God as he was wrapping all of this together. That's how this episode felt for me. And the metaverse, then the metaverse comes up and technology. I mean, like, it was all there in this one conversation. Yep. With Gloria Umana, who is, she's the visionary of the Ex Nihilo Collective, which is such a beautiful idea. It's this organization that really is, it's on mission to transform lives through art. But what was the phrase that she was using with us? High capacity art.
High capacity creatives. And she kept even
saying high capacity creatives. Yeah.
Reminding people who don't think they're creative to reminding them that they're created because they were created by the creator.
Right.
So not just artists in the traditional sense, but.
And then she's wrapping in the whole idea of being made in the image of God, which is such a big deal. I'm no kidding. I couldn't keep up with God during this podcast, but I will tell you this. My heart is full. My heart is just encouraged by the conversation that we had with Gloria, learning what they're doing with this Hope Booth, which is a 3-minute interactive experience that they're putting into cities for people who are walking by to experience. I mean, I just can't wait for our listeners to experience some of this and to hear her story. And I'm going to go on ahead and say to hear her heart and the passion and the emotion that comes from this story. Mm-hmm. Oh my.
And if you listeners are anything like me, you're going to walk away going, I really want to be friends with Gloria.
No kidding.
I have paid attention and followed her work for a little while, but it was this conversation that just, I was like, oh my gosh, I need to go to Atlanta and we can be best friends.
Exactly.
So listeners, you're going to feel the same way after hearing Gloria talk today.
Yeah. So it seems to me like we now need to just jump in on this conversation that we're having with Gloria Umana. Okay, Gloria, we are so grateful to have you with us. And I told you just a little bit ago, I can't wait for our listeners to learn a lot more about what you and your team are doing. But could we just start with some context? Give us a little bit of your story, your family, and then I think we'll eventually begin to kind of flowing into what you're doing now. But we'd love to know a little bit about you.
Absolutely. Firstly, I'm super excited to be here. So thank you so much for having me on board. It's always a joy and a privilege to get to share a little bit more about the work God's called me to. So this is exciting. But in case you're listening, you have no clue who I am. My name is Gloria Umana. And I live in Atlanta, Georgia, which I like to call Ratchet Central of the United States of America. Best place there is in the U.S., in my personal opinion. But I have the unique opportunity of leading something called the Ex Nihilo Collective, which essentially is a collective of creatives around the globe. And our whole mission really is to raise up and equip high capacity creatives who will use their creativity to transform their community and their city. We firmly believe that the gospel moves at the speed of relationships. And so kind of what we do and what we wholeheartedly believe in is if we can get creatives together to just simply find community within each other, then we can then foster and facilitate relationships that opens doors for conversation versus forcing beliefs upon people. And so that's been something that has been really just amazing that I get to do and that I'm really passionate about. And then we've had the opportunity to spearhead something called the Hope Booth, which is our newest and latest initiative, which is in essence, it's pioneering a movement where no one goes unseen. That's our whole goal and our heart. And we're doing it in really unique and creative ways, which I'm sure we will get to dive
absolutely
into pretty deeply.
Talk to you about that.
No, it's wild, wild stuff for sure.
Yeah. And so timely, so timely. Mm. Hope is a big deal to me. That word is a big deal to me. Yeah. But I want to back up because this Ex Nihilo collective is an extraordinary idea to me that there were a couple of things that you said. One of them is high capacity artists. You're trying to engage people at the highest level of their art to leverage that art towards good, towards healing, towards the kingdom. Where did an idea like that come from? Because when you hear it, it sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
But how was that birthed?
Yeah, that's a great question. I feel like everything always has backstory to it.
Right.
Well, for me personally, I was a spoken word artist that traveled and did a lot of really incredible events with churches and nonprofits and organizations and helping them tell their stories in beautiful and powerful ways outside of Christmas and Easter, for example, the only two times of the year that a lot of people like to get creative. And so in all of that, I was doing all of this traveling and I saw the beauty and power of what I was doing. But then I had this really morbid thought one day, and the thought was, what if I die tomorrow? Everything that I've done, as great as it is, will just simply be done. And that's when the ideology and the concept of if everything that you built and that you build dies the moment that you do, then you didn't create something bigger than yourself. And so then I began to go on this journey of what does it look like to live for something bigger than myself, but also to pioneer something that will outlive Gloria, even if that means Gloria will just become a person of the fine print. And I think it's really hard in the creative space to find creatives who care about building something bigger than themselves. You know, everyone constantly has this ambition to make their name great, an ambition to platform themselves, an ambition to ensure that people remember who they are. But I think at the end of the day, there are people who really do care about building something bigger and something better and something that will live longer, something that's eternal at the end of the day. And so I started thinking about, well, what does it look like to find people who care about building something bigger than themselves, that care about creativity as well? And then what does it look like to come together and to lead in these spaces? And not necessarily, I think for me as a believer, one of the things that I found challenging was the fact that I felt like if we go back in time to maybe like the 1800s, 1900s, we see that a lot of the people leading in a lot of these creative spaces, whether that's film, whether that's music, whether that's poetry, a lot of these people were believers in Christ Jesus. These are people who are retelling the story with the DNA of the Father inside of their heart. So these are people who are natural storytellers because Jesus was the greatest storyteller to have ever walked this earth. So I think to myself, how is it in our DNA that we have this inherent creativity, yet we aren't really leading the way in creativity? I went to so many churches that creativity was just so below the bar. Listen to so many Christian songs where the creativity was just below the bar and it was cringy. I watched so many films that were literally 1% on Rotten Tomato made by believers. And I think for myself, the challenging part is, well, how do we adopt the spirit of creativity? If it's in my veins, it's in my DNA. We think about Genesis 1. I read it so often, and there's this really cool moment where we see God speaks the word, let there be, and instantly things come into fruition. And so before he speaks, let there be, there is darkness. The earth is full of void. And we talk about like the emptiness that we see. And then he speaks, let there be, and there is now filling to where there was emptiness. He speaks, let there be. There's now light to where there was darkness. He speaks, let there be, and there's no longer voids anymore. And so I'm noticing there's this beauty and power in that word, let there be. And then he speaks us into existence. And so it's like, I've become in essence, like a carrier of the Let There Be Spirit, meaning that what's inside of me has the ability to speak, let there be, and transform culture. Every single person walking on this earth is a creative. And if everyone can grasp that concept, they'll begin to realize that behind their breath, there is greater purpose than just their name alone. They have the ability to speak, let there be, in their homes, in their coffee shops, in their communities. You have the ability to speak, let there be, in the unique way that you've been created and crafted. And it's like, if everyone leaned into that, imagine what our world would look like today.
Well, first of all, that'll preach. If nobody's ever told you, that'll preach. Second of all, I think what I'm hearing you say is you're speaking of the fact that we're image bearers of the Most High God, the most creative being in the universe.
Yeah.
And so we get to enter into, in our world, broken as it is, darkness, yeah, chaos, mm-hmm, all of these things. And we are the ones who can create beauty.
Yeah.
And we're reflecting the very image of God in which we are made. That's what I love about what you're saying. But the other part of it for me is this collaborative thing, that the we, not me, that you talk about.
Yeah.
I've heard you, I've read some of the stuff that you've said about this magnifying our names. And you talk about a competition that we can get sucked into of, we're competing with each other to magnify names instead of this fine print approach to how we do things. Can you talk a little bit more about what it means to be someone who lives in the fine print? I've never heard it described that way. Say a little bit more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of our anchors that our team really hones in on often is this idea of collaboration over competition. And I think if we want to set ourselves apart, then we have to first realize that we're on the same team. And I think it can be challenging and difficult, I think, especially because I've worked in so many spaces where that's not the case scenario. It's all of these different churches and organizations and individuals with the same goal, trying to get to the same place by themselves.
Some of them don't even realize what, at least my experience, some folk churches don't know, or people don't know what somebody is doing three blocks away.
Mm-hmm.
And if they locked arms.
It's like, imagine what would, like, I wonder if people maybe are missing out on the beauty of the reality of collaboration. It's not taking away. If anything, it is advancing what you're doing. And I think,
absolutely,
if we can grow to understand how the world operates when it comes to business partnerships, imagine if we had kingdom partnerships, that people that we are divinely to be connected to. And I think there's a lot of times, like, we think we can get somewhere, but a lot of times we can't get some places without some people. Like, they are destined to be on the journey with us. And so it's like, man, if you can do what you feel like you're called to do without this extra one wind of the Holy Spirit, but then also people to come around you, you probably aren't dreaming that big. You're going to be on a train that's not going to leave the station at the end of the day.
I completely agree with that.
And that's going to be such a waste of time. And so I think we really just have to get out of this idea that we are in a competition with people, because then it's going to rob us of the opportunity of inviting people into a story that's so much bigger than ourselves. I'm not the headline anyway. So it's not like you coming into the picture is going to push me down in where I am on the totem pole. If I have decided from the jump, I am okay being in the fine print. I'm okay if my name only shows up in the credits because the impact on others' lives is going to be so much more worth it, then so be it. You lose you lose this, like, this pressure to mentally strive. You don't wake up every day trying to figure out, what can I do to get there? What can I do to make sure this person thinks that I'm validated or approved, or that the work we're doing is applauded? You know, in your heart, the work we are doing is impactful, and I can look around and I can see that. People may never know my name, and that's okay. I think we've got to get to a point where we're okay being ghost creatives, if that's how you want to put it.
Yeah. But if we are truly, now this has all of this spiritual language around it. And so for those of us who follow Christ, there is that connectivity provided by the Spirit of God. You mentioned him earlier.
Yeah.
So if God is getting the glory on this, there truly is, even in the fine print, there is a blessing there that is so rich and real. At least that's been my experience, you know, if and when I get it that way, when, if I can live in the fine print, there's a richness there that the world isn't going to tell you about.
Absolutely.
And we get caught up. One of the things for me is we talk about the zero sum game mentality that just is so pervasive in the kingdom of, well, wait, if you get the credit, then I lose out. If you get the money, I lose out. If more people come to your church, then my church isn't going to grow. And I couldn't agree with you more. We're not dreaming big enough. God is bigger than that. The kingdom, what he's up to is bigger than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the things we say on our team often is, if I win, you win. And if you win, we win. And if we win, he wins. And it's like, if we can adopt this like teamship mentality of like being able to champion truly from our heart other people, then we'll begin to realize that like that aroma is going to be seen by people who don't even believe what we believe. And they're going to say, what you have, I don't see it in this industry. I want to know more about that.
That's the
art of celebrating others is exactly that. It is merely an art. And I think if we can figure out how to perfect that art, then I think we'll begin to see a culture of collaboration become so much easier.
I couldn't agree more. And to me, the timeliness of these hope booths is a great reflection of that. So I'd love for you to talk about, you know, what are they? You know, what is the heart behind it? Please just start sharing with us about that.
Absolutely. Okay, so I'll start by saying it was 2020 when our team, the Ex Nihilo Collective, who would often travel in groups to collaboratively tell really powerful stories across the country, all of our events got canceled naturally, and we couldn't go anywhere. And I just began thinking to myself, does that mean that's the end of like our era? Like, are we done if all the events are canceled? We have, at this time, we had no clue of when all of this was going to end, when we'd be able to travel ever again. We had no idea. You guys were living the same timing as me. So we know all the same things. And I remember thinking to myself, I feel as though if creativity is inside of my DNA, then it is far too powerful for a pandemic to cancel it out. And so I began just thinking and strategizing, like, what does moving forward look like? And that's when I so clearly heard God say, it's time to pivot from the stage to the streets. What would it look like if you took your creativity to people who do not even care about the church, who may never find their way to the church? What would it look like if your creativity met them exactly where they are? And so I began thinking, man, what does it look like for the person who believes that what I have to say is irrelevant because they have seen the hecticness of the church and the world in this time frame? It was so much tension and confusion and hopelessness ultimately. And so our team stumbled upon this statistic that the average person living on the streets goes 3 to 6 months without being looked in the eye. And I remember hearing that. And for the first time, I was at a loss for words, because I think to myself, like, if I personally am a believer of Christ Jesus and I serve Elroy, God who sees, like that's his name. If I serve him, but there are people on my street who don't even know that they are seen, and I'm supposed to be a physical manifestation and representation of this God who sees, something's not adding up. If there are a million churches here in this country and that statistic exists, what are we doing? Like, then I began thinking, well, okay, how do I shift everything to prioritize those who feel unseen? That's who Christ came to ultimately reach. And so I began just strategizing and praying and thinking. And I think the reality of, like, even if you're not living on the streets, you know the feeling of invisibility. Every person in their life has experienced it in some capacity, and it may look different for everyone. And for me, I experienced it 11 years ago, where I almost lost my own life because I was known by name by hundreds, yet I still felt invisible. And so that's when I began to realize, I think we need to create something that makes people feel seen. And in being seen, I think that's where hope comes from, where we know that the story doesn't end with just me. There's so much bigger to this, and there's so much more. And so that's when we created the Hope Booth. And what the Hope Booth is, if you have no clue what it is a 3-minute interactive immersive experience where we've used art and technology to spread hope in a very unique and artistic way. And our goal is to have the Hope Booth permanently installed all over the globe, from prisons to hospitals to street corners and universities. And how do we show people that, yeah, while these Hope Booths are present right now and accessible to anyone and everyone, to receive hope and to know that they're seen, how do we teach people to do the hard work of seeing others? Like, how do you become a carrier of that movement and not have to rely on a Hope Booth? And so our goal and prayer and hope is that 20 years from now, we may not have to use Hope Booths because they did the work that it was supposed to do in showing people that you are a carrier of hope wherever you go. And so it's been wild and exciting. And I just think about the fact that, like, the Hope Booth couldn't exist today without the power of collaboration. I really, at heart, am just a visionary. I am not good with my hands. I can't even hang frames in my home. Like, I had to find somebody to come and help me do that. But it's like, man, you may have this one idea, and then you may have several people who can help execute this idea. And then you have several people who can help speak into the intricacies of this idea. And then you have people who can strategize the idea. And so it's like, imagine what happens if you come around a group of people moving towards one direction versus if I tried to do all of this by myself, it would still be an idea. And I think we have so many ideas today that can transform the world if they are executed, but they're still sitting in ideation stage because we're too afraid to invite people into the story because of our overprotectiveness of a project or an idea.
I have so many different ways we can go with this, Gloria. Please forgive me if I start just asking some questions. This is such
totally
a,
okay.
This is, there's so much texture to what you're describing. First, let's go back to, there was a very personal part of what you were sharing there where it sounds like you felt the weight of this unseenness. Mm-hmm. And as a sidebar, we didn't say, I see you 20 years ago. This is something that is, it's certainly not new because you're, I think you're spot on with the Hebrew name for God, the God, he is the God who sees from Genesis, but so he has always been this, but it feels like we are in a season of many who are unseen. Mm-hmm. This wasn't birthed out of theory for you. There was a personal part of this that drove you to this.
Absolutely. I think, for me, it's something that actually took me quite a while to ever talk about because I was honestly so ashamed of it. And I started to realize that, like, oftentimes I think it's easy to feel ashamed of our scars until we begin to realize that our scars are literally roadmaps of redemption for other people. That, like, people will see these and know, like, oh, this is where you've been. And so if you've made it, that means I can make it too.
Right.
And I think that has been what's been so beautiful and transformative about even just this project alone, because of the amount of people I've stumbled upon that think that this might just be some creative idea, for them to find out, like, oh, you personally have been in a spot where you felt as though there was no hope. And, like, for me, it was 11 years ago. I remember so vividly an entire year of my life crying myself to sleep every single night. Mm. And imagine, like, being a pastor's kid. This is a really unique and wild story. I remember in this particular year of my life, just feeling as though I had no hope at all, feeling as though my life didn't matter, feeling as though I was invisible, feeling as though I was simply and merely just acknowledged, but not appreciated. I think that's the beauty and power of being seen. It's that you're not just acknowledged, your life is appreciated, it matters. And I remember one particular night, going to a youth D-Now, kind of like a youth weekend thing. My mom said, hey, I really want you to go. And I was like, man, I don't really want to go, but my mom's African, so I can't say no. It's literally not an option. That word is not in our diction. And so I was like, all right, yes, ma'am. And I remember packing with me everything that I wanted to use to end my life that night, because I truly felt and believed I don't have anything worth living. No one truly knows my name. And I remembered sitting in a massive auditorium. And I prayed a really, really small prayer. And I said, God, if you are who you say you are, would you encounter me? And I think ultimately what my heart was saying was, would you see me? That I think that would be the synonym for what I was praying for in that moment. And I remember going through about 20 minutes into the gathering, the service, and I felt like nothing was different. Like, I felt like God wasn't encountering me in any moment. And so I remember taking a few steps towards the auditorium door, just about to leave. I felt like I gave God 20 minutes. And in my mind, if you could do what you did in 7 days, 6 days, you can do a lot in 20 minutes, and you did nothing. And so in my mind, I start walking towards the exit. I put my hand on the door, about to open it. And the person that's preaching stops their message and says, "There's someone in this room who's getting ready to take their life. God wants to encounter you. There's not a chance this is happening right now." And then immediately the lies began to flood into my mind. And I started thinking to myself, well, I'm a pastor's kid. People are going to think I'm crazy if they know that this is what I'm struggling with and what I'm dealing with. Like, I don't know if I can bear that weight. And he stopped again. And he said, "I know right now the enemy is trying to trick you into believing what people will think about you. But," he said, "this is the encounter you prayed for." And it's like, I think about that day often, because in my mind, I'm just like, God cared that much to let Gloria know that she is seen. And so it's like, ever since that moment, I have carried this like immense weight of carrying this mandate of ensuring that other people know that they are seen, that other people know that they don't have to give up, that other people know that their life is valued and purposed. And like, I feel like so many people don't realize that on the inside of them is the answer to someone else's prayer. Like, I don't think that pastor realized that day that on the inside of him, God planted an answer to my prayer that has kept me alive today. And so it's like, why wouldn't I give my life to this work? Why wouldn't I do everything possible to raise the millions of dollars I need so that people would know that they're seen? That's the point of it all. Like, I'm okay if I never step on another stage again, if I get to meet people in the streets and they are encouraged to live another day. That's big. That is important and so valued. And so that is something that has just changed me over the last year, the realization that God can take my story and redeem it immensely for the sake of so many lives. And so it's been beautiful. It's hard, it's messy, and it's wild, but it is worth it.
First of all, thank you.
Absolutely.
And second of all, you are embodying, I hate to sound like a pastor here for a second, but you are embodying what Paul says in that opening chapter, like those opening lines in 2 Corinthians, when he talks about the God of all comfort who comforts us in our troubles so that we can comfort those in trouble with the comfort we have received from God. That's how these scars become roadmaps to healing. And I completely understand what you're saying. And it's sometimes it takes a long time and you look back and eventually there's this meaning that is poured into the struggle, to the hurt, to the storm that you went through. And it's God begins to redeem not just your hurt, but like pours meaning into how you're going to now connect with others.
Absolutely.
Which gets us back to that word hope. God's not finished with us. So it would be so important, I think, for us to understand. The next part of that question I had for you was these hope booths that you're dropping into cities. Like, what is that experience? Can you describe what that experience is? Maybe even we can experience a little bit of that. But what is it? Somebody walks up. What is it, like 3 minutes that they're there? Is that right?
3 minutes. Yeah. So the goal was we wanted to create an experience that would reach anyone from the person living on the streets to the CEO of a Fortune 500. Because I think regardless of your stage of life, there's beauty and power of knowing that you were seen and finding hope in that. And so we wanted to make it simplistic enough to where anyone and everyone can understand and experience. But we also wanted to make it artistic enough to where it engages heart, soul, and mind.
And it holds your attention, right? Because let's remember, I'm on a busy street corner.
Yes, exactly. And that was the goal of making it, one, immersive. So we wanted you to feel like you are there. And so the experience starts by saying, for the next 3 minutes, be here. And I think there's a beauty and a power of being present that I think we have missed over decades, I would say. As technology has advanced, it has taught us how to not be present. And so it's funny, it's like, okay, let's use technology to teach people how to be present. And so it starts by saying for the next 3 minutes, be here. And I think it's so unique because the amount of people who responded based off of just that moment of the experience, first 20 seconds, they say, man, I didn't realize how much I was carrying. And I think there's beauty in just releasing. I think a lot of times we just forget how much we're carrying, that we have to be more mindful of the power of releasing things so that we can be somewhere and be fully there.
For the next 3 minutes, be here. Leave behind the distractions, the failures, the insecurities, the loneliness, the worries, the noise, the fears, the shame, the mistakes, the anxiety, the stress, the pressure. Take a deep breath.
Why is it so hard to share our thoughts? This is a question that rattles something uncomfortable yet is always avoided. Maybe it's time we dissect this together. Are you willing to open that door? Let's begin with this. Close your eyes. Now, imagine a chameleon. Imagine the way they mix their scales like paint and make the world their canvas. Always able to blend in no matter the shade, like spies hiding in a sea of colors. Now, open your eyes. Can you imagine how it must feel to have those skills? To have mastered the art of imitating life around you? I wonder if they ever get tired of concealing. As if they get so lost in their state of mind, I'm sorry, their color, they forget what they are trying to protect. I wonder if they are afraid of being seen. Petrified at the thought of simply just being. In fear of being treated differently or attacked for letting their guard down. Can you see the similarities in us? How we sometimes rehearse smiles and laughter yet feel so defeated underneath. Held captive by thoughts that take us places we wish not to go, but can't help but go there because inside things feel out of control. Sometimes it's just easier to hide in plain sight than to be open and misunderstood or judged. Just because the color of our struggle doesn't match the expectations of others. But one thing for sure I know is this. What is gray right now won't always be that color. You are radiant in the midst of a storm, awaiting to feel sun, and the dawn is coming. One day, you too will rise above dark skies like a beautiful morning, and you will own your own shine. Because you are not defined by your battles, but resilience scales. And just like the chameleon, you will find you are able to embrace who you are. You won't have to change to simply be.
Now say this with me. I am who I'm meant to be. Take this moment with you. Hold on to it. This hope is yours.
Yeah, so we mainly had a majority of our people throughout the 30-day 19-city tour experience that experience right there, everything that we just listened to and heard, and the amount of people who left in tears was mind-blowing to me, because I think at the time when we were writing and crafting that all together, we knew what we created was going to be powerful, but we underestimated how powerful. The amount of people who shared the story of realizing that they have just kind of been hiding in fear that who they are is not enough, or that they won't be accepted, or that it's too much. Fear of what would happen if I let go of these camouflage layers and people saw me for who I really was, to come into this experience and hear that, walk away knowing like who I am is not a mistake. That was big for people to understand and to walk into.
It seems like I'm making too big a connection here, but it seems like this reaches back to your story, to your experience, that these truths are an antidote to those lies that are creeping into every one of our heads.
Yeah,
and absolutely. There's an intentionality of confronting those lies with truth.
Absolutely. And I think if you think about it, lies only make themselves present when truth is also present. The truth of who we are is intimidating to a lie. And so I think in these moments where we have this antidote make itself present and known, if we can step into the truth of our being, despite the lies, and continue to show up in the fullness of who we are, we'll eventually begin to realize the lies are just that. They're just lies.
This is so good. This is so good. I want to ask you about, because there's so much thought that you all have put into this, clearly have prayed about this, clearly you're being led. So my wife and I were in New York a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and we're hitting some museums one day and just going in. And it strikes me that works of art, for the most part, are in these tucked away places, these protected places, and I understand it. I mean, I get it, the security and all of that. But what you're describing is so counter to that, because it, as opposed to me walking through one of those, fancy schmancy museums in New York City, now I'm picturing a hope booth just right there on a busy street corner where humanity is, rushing by. Why is that so important for it to be? Why such an intentional way of putting that in the busyness of the world versus tucked away? Because I think oftentimes we think of art as something that we revere, that we soak up. And I think all of that's important.
Yeah.
But this is not what you're doing, is it?
Transformative art is meant to be engaged. And there's this tendency to see that the way that the world is moving in this really technologically advanced way, and to want to run from it. But I think if we talk about God doing a new thing, then it's like, okay, well, what does that new thing look like in the face of where we are right now in our culture, in our world? How do I, instead of running away from technology, how do I engage with it and flip the coin almost? If I feel like there's this negative connotation, how do I use it for good? Like, if we think technology has advanced now, you just wait 10 years from now to see where we will be. And so it's like, well, what if we got our foot in on the deep end and began to implant moments of hope throughout a journey that we feel like could potentially be really hopeless in the long run? And I think hope is meant to be accessible. That's what makes it hope. It's accessible. It knows no borders or boundaries. It doesn't have barricades or parameters around who gets to receive it, who doesn't. And I think that's the unique thing about art in our way of how we are wanting the hope booth to be easy accessible, is that, hey, the goal is for all people. Again, from the person living on the street to the CEO of the Fortune 500, all have experienced the feeling of invisibility in one way or another. Some maybe more than others, but it's like, well, what if we created something that could be engaged with everyone? Wouldn't that, in a sense, be a way of affirming someone's dignity?
Yeah, it seems like, if I go back to my silly example, if hope was just hanging on a wall in a museum, then I have to intentionally go find out in what gallery, in what hallway, on what floor, and then I can go stare at it for a little bit.
Yeah.
As opposed to what you're saying is, this needs to be in the world and experienced.
Absolutely.
In the moment, because the people who need it the most aren't going to intentionally go to a museum and stare at it on a wall.
Exactly. And I'll share this too. I honestly don't know if I'm supposed to share this, but I'll share it anyway. So one of the concepts that we are working with right now is figuring out how to get the Hope Booth in the metaverse. And we think about this concept of, a lot of the people right now that are submerged in the metaverse, you'll ask yourself, well, what are they doing there? These are grown adults. They're escaping reality. Mm-hmm. Not everybody, but a lot of people are escaping reality. They're not necessarily looking for hope, but they know in their heart and hearts that if hope intersected them, it would change their lives. And so imagine being able to think of ways to intersect someone's life in a way that they're never going to imagine. Like, I think a lot of the stories we hear, like my own personal story, is I could have never imagined that moment happening. I didn't plan for it. I wasn't looking for it. I didn't even necessarily know if I wanted it. But knowing that, like, hope has the ability to do that, and like being able to create something that, again, knows no borders or boundaries, can end up anywhere and everywhere to intersect in people's stories, that is game changer right
Well,
there.
And another great example of this undercurrent that seems to be running through your, through the collective, which is we want to be on the front end of these things and not reactive to them. So entering into the metaverse in a redemptive way seems like it's just, it seems like it's consistent with what you're doing in other areas with your art, which is not being the last one into the discussion, but moving out ahead. So I love that. I love that. Are there any other stories that you would want to just, that come to mind when you think of folks who have experienced these, and how do we sign up for some of those to be in our cities?
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, there's tons. So we have a documentary that came out in, I want to say it's December. And it really highlights the journey of hope, like how we got from idea to here we are at our debut in London this past October, which was wild and amazing.
What's the title?
It's called The Journey to Hope. And it currently can be found on YouTube. Or if you want to go through our website, hopeboot.com, you can find it through there. But based off of the response, this was not just a cool idea. This was an impactful idea. We needed to figure out how to keep going. And so,
anointed idea, I might say.
Oh, thanks. So we started this Indiegogo campaign to raise $40,000 to go on a Hope Booth tour across the U.S. So many people were saying, hey, like, can you bring the Hope Booth to our city? And that's amazing. But we only have one prototype. We haven't gotten to raise all the funds necessary to complete this and make it happen in its fullest form. And so we were like, okay, well, we got to take it on a U.S. tour. And so we were planning a 30-day 19-city tour across the U.S. And I don't know if you know much about crowdfunding campaigns, but essentially, if you don't make a solid amount in the first 24 hours, just cancel. Go ahead and cancel. And we made 2% in the first 24 hours. And I remember sitting there and I was thinking to myself, well, I guess we got a couple more days to figure this out. And so we really just started praying. And we're like, God, we know that this idea you gave us is bigger than us. And something we say on our team often is, if it's bigger than you, then it's perfect for God. And so we really weren't stressed. We knew that it was going to happen because it had nothing to do with us. And on day 12, very random thing happened. A church in Tulsa, Oklahoma donated $50,000 to us. They didn't call us. They didn't email us. They just did it on live television in the middle of their message. And it was wild, the wildest thing we could have imagined. Mm-hmm. And so in March, aka a couple months ago, we got to take this on tour. And the very first city we started was Nashville. And I remember we were at our Nashville campsite because we're traveling by way of RV, which I would never do again, but we're traveling by way of RV and we're preparing, we're getting ready. And naturally, as a leader, I'm sitting there and I'm just having this high anxiety moment where I'm like, I think struggling with imposter syndrome. You're trying to figure out, is what I created really going to be that impactful? And so I'm thinking to myself, no way. Like, this is dumb. Gloria, like, how did you drag people into this far? I'm feeling like an imposter. And I'm like, okay, well, we're here. So I have no choice but to show up.
You needed to step into a hope booth at that moment because those lies were bouncing around.
They were bouncing. And because of those lies, I knew, okay, we have to show up because clearly there is something that's powerful here that's going to happen. And so we show up to our first site. We're setting up, we get ready. And I want to say it's maybe like the second person that comes to experience the booth. And in the booth, we have right now a GoPro that helps us tell the story from a different vantage point. Had the iPad with me and was watching the response of the person in the experience. And I just couldn't help but to notice the tears flowing down her eyes and her body is just like, it's just shaking and jolting. And in my brain, I'm wondering to myself, like, man, how is she being impacted right now? Like, what is her story? What has happened? And so she finishes the experience and she shares with our team that about a year ago, her mom committed suicide and her mom's name was Hope. And that this was just such a confirming moment of feeling seen, that she just could have never imagined that right at that 1 year anniversary, she would be walking around her college campus and something would be there for her to be reminded that she is seen and that her mom, even though she's no longer here, she is still loved. And so it was just like, it was a crazy experience for us, because I think what would seem coincidental to many just felt very prophetic for us, to sit there and hear someone say, like, this is exactly what I needed today. And that was the second experience of a 30-day tour. And so that was just so confirming. And that continually happened every single day. The Hope Booth experience is so unique because for some people, it's encouragement for the day. And then for others, it's encouragement to live another day. And that those are the people that I'm after, those who choose to live another day because of a 3-minute experience. And that's where I knew, like, what we created is, it is bigger than us. And so it's perfect for God. All that we need that we don't already have, He will provide it, because this is something that's transforming people's lives in a really unconventional way, in a way I could have literally never imagined in a million years and couldn't have dreamed up or conjured up on my own. And so I've just been grateful throughout this journey.
But that's how you know it's of God, because Absolutely. It is that big and that unpredictable and that good. Before I ask you some kind of fun questions here at the end, like, what is next? What looks like next thing we can expect from this? Because now we're all curious and interested, and what should we be looking for next?
Absolutely. So next, really, our biggest thing right now is raising money to find out how we can finalize our completed version. So really, our next stage, we're already in the writing process of writing these next 30 experiences so that we can have these experiences in the final installations that will be permanently installed in our prisons, in our schools, our street corners. And so over these next few months, our prayer and goal is to raise at least $200,000. Okay. So that we can start the filming, we can start the editing, we can have our animators begin to go in and animate, we can have the app developed, we can do the scoring. And it's a lot of elements, to be honest. And I don't think I realized that until I sat down and I said, what did my brain think of? Like, and so now we're in the stage where we're like, okay, now we need to, now that we've gauged the impact and we know this works and this is impactful and is worthy of going all out, we have committed our lives to these things. We have seen how this transformed people. So now we're just in the process of raising the money and connecting with people who want to help make us happy. Make this happen on a big scale so that come next summer, we can start installing the Hope Booths permanently, like, and really opening the opportunity for communities and churches and cities to sponsor a booth to go in their city. And that's kind of the goal and the hope. And then from there, replicating that around the globe and pioneering this movement where no one goes unseen and raising up people to know that they can join us in the work of seeing their neighbors, seeing others in their community. Whether they have a Hope Booth there or not, like, you will be the Hope Booth. That's the goal. And so that's kind of where we are right now as far as what's next. We have a documentary coming out. I don't want to give the wrong date, but I think it is July 1st, sometime in July this summer, that just kind of highlights the journey of the tour, which was wild and unbelievably amazing. And so I'm really excited for that to come out. And
of course, we'll want all of that information. Our listeners will get all of that into the show notes, because, you know, my hope and prayer is that somebody's heart gets ignited here and says, wait, I want to collaborate with you. I want to be a part of this. So, Gloria, I told you this a little bit ago, but I could just hear your stories and your heart all day long. I am so appreciative of what you're doing. You're a blessing. God is clearly working through you and this team. I can't wait to see what happens. I can't wait. I'm already dreaming of, well, how do we collaborate and how does this? Because yeah. I just want to encourage what you're doing in this world. This will be right in your lane. What I love to do is to ask people, like, if you could give a shout out to a person, an organization, an artist that is doing great things in the world, who are you going to nominate for a Way to Go award?
lovely. I already have the person and organization in my mind. It's an organization in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it's called Be Heard. And it's honestly similar in heartbeat to what we're doing, except very different. Their goal and heart is to serve those who are living in the streets with very tangible resources. And so what they have are a couple mobile like shops. So they have a mobile barbershop where people living on the streets can come and get free haircuts. They have mobile showers where people can come at least a couple times a week to get a shower, because apparently people living on the streets go up to 3 months without having a shower. And so many of the people who go into these showers come out and they say, I feel human again. That's so big and so important. Like, doing the hard work of affirming someone's dignity in such a tangible and practical way. And so, Evan, if you ever get the chance to listen to this, though I live on the other side of the country, I am watching what you're doing and rooting you on. And Be Heard is beautiful and powerful. And what you guys are doing over there in Tulsa is changing so many lives and giving so many people opportunities to get off the streets, find jobs, find stability, and remind themselves that they are seen, known, and loved. And that is huge right there.
That's so good. So good. Okay. Let me ask you some just rapid fire questions. These are the end ones here. Okay. So it's one person that has made a lasting impact on your life.
That's a great question. I will have to go with my parents on this one. I'm going to have to go with my parents.
Good. What's one thing you're loving these days that we should check out? Now, this could be a book. This could be music. This could be something you're streaming. This could be anything. What's something we should check out that we might not know about?
Okay, two things. One, if you're not hip to long walks, I need you to start going on long walks. They will clear your mind and free your heart. And then two, a podcast that I've been loving lately is Commoner's Communion. Max 13 minutes. They're pretty short. They're not interview style. It's more so like a poetic prayer type style. And so it's really powerful and really beautiful.
Okay. All right. What's one way that you're connecting with God these days?
One way I've been connecting with God these ways, ironically, is my walks. I don't know, something about those walks around the city early in the morning with the birds chirping and the breeze blowing just connects me so greatly to God.
What's one thing you wish you could have learned sooner?
One thing I could wish I could have learned sooner. Man, that's a great question. I guess what I wish I could have learned sooner is that I don't need to wait until I'm older. I think there's so many things that God's planted in my heart at a very young age that I probably, if I had done it sooner, I think could have impacted more people quicker. And so I don't know how much time I have left on this earth. And so no longer believe in the lie that, well, I got to wait till I'm 40 or I got to wait till I'm 50. Like, start now. Whatever age you are, start now.
Yes. Amen. Yes. 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 What's one trait that you had growing up that you still have?
I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-E-N-T. Independent as it gets. Really great. Independent and that's can make great. Things happen.
Okay. Last one. And I can't think of a question that is more customized to you.
Okay.
So here it is. And we ask this of everyone. Okay.
Okay.
What's one way you're moving into this next year with hope?
One way I'm moving in this next year with hope is probably that phrase that I said we say on our team often is, if it's bigger than you, then it's perfect for God. So really releasing myself of the pressure of, how am I going to make this happen? I have little resources, little network. Our team is all minorities. We don't have a lot of access to a lot of things. So I'm releasing myself from the pressure of that, knowing that God is going to make this happen as he's brought us this far already. And so there's so much hope in knowing that I don't have to carry the pressure of the outcome.
Okay. Wow. And I'm just going to say this publicly, and I promise you, I will footnote you and credit you, but that phrase is going to get used by me more than once.
Go for it. I don't even know where we came up with it from, but go for
it. I'm giving you the credit for it until, you know, somebody else shows up. But I'm just telling you, that is so spot on. And really, this has just been such an encouraging conversation for me personally, but I think for our listeners, and so timely. So one more time, just thank you. Thank you for taking the time to be with us. Thanks for sharing your heart. Thanks for what you're doing. We can't wait to hear really how God uses this in the coming days and weeks.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to a Godzillion in One podcast. Subscribe, share this episode with a friend, and head over to gregholder.com for the show notes. And as always, stop and notice this week the shockingly and seemingly endless ways to connect with each other, this world, and the God who made it all. We'll see you next time.